Torah tells us in Parshas Chukas, Vayiru kala eda kigava Aaron, Vayivku es Aaron shloshim yom kol beis Yisrael. When Aaron HaKohen died, the Bnei Yisrael realized that an era had come to an end. So they cried for Aaron for 30 days. Today is Rosh Chodesh, and it's also Be'ez Peidim, and I'm certainly not right to be Masvid or of Liechtenstein. But nevertheless, in the words of David HaMelech, Sar v'godol nafal hayom b'yishazeh b'Yisrael. And when such a great godol passes away, we have to say at least something. This week's parasha here in Eretz Yisrael is Parasha Sachi Mos Kedoshim. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe acharei mos shnei b'nei Aaron because of some lifnei Hashem vayamusu. And we read this parasha on Yom Kippur. And Chazal tell us that a person is supposed to be morid d'maos when he hears about the death of Nadav and Avihu. Person's supposed to cry. Not only the people who lived at the time of Nadav Avihu, but the people who lived generations later, centuries later, thousands of years later, should cry when they hear about the death of Nadav Avihu. Nadav and Avihu were great people. But why is there such an obligation that I should be crying for Nadav and Avihu? So I think it's Reb Chaim Shmulevitz who explains that Nadav and Avihu died relatively young, so to speak, before their time. And they were destined to become the leaders of Am Yisrael after Moshe and Aaron. But they were taken away at a young age. And we need to realize that had Nadav and Avihu lived, we'd be living in a different world. It would have been a different Am Yisrael, because they would have contributed so much more to Am Yisrael. And therefore, even though I live thousands of years later, I'm missing something. Because Nadav and Avihu are no longer, didn't live to reach their potential. Rav Lichtenstein is, I think, 82 when he was Nifter. And from a certain perspective, that's also young. Rav Vosner Zatzal, who was Nifta Leila Seder, was 102. And from that perspective, one could say Rav Lichtenstein was only 82. And we need to realize that had he lived longer, it would be a different world. But as I said, it's not a day for Espeda. So I don't want to talk about what would have been had Rav Lichtenstein been Zoche, had we been Zoche, to have him live longer, but rather how different the world is because some 82 years ago, a young boy was born in France and made it out with his parents in time before the war and lived his life. Rav Lichtenstein, and I just want to say, I'm just going to say a few brief words. I couldn't encompass everything if I wanted to. I certainly didn't have the time to properly prepare, and I'm not the right person to do so. Bezos Hashem, I think Rav Berzon will talk tomorrow morning, and I'm sure he'll have a great deal to add. Rav Lichtenstein was the son-in-law of Soloveitchik. But he became a gadol in his own right. You don't become a gadol through Yerusha. You can't get it by inheritance. You can't just be born into the right family or marry into the right family. You have to earn it on your own. I remember after Rav Hudna was nifter, Rav Hudna was the Rosh Hashiva, Yeshivas Chaim Berlin, where Rav Lichtenstein had learned before he came to YU and learned by the Rav. And he used to always refer to Rav Hudna as Mori Varabi. And Rav Lichtenstein gave a very powerful hesped for Rav Hudna. And at the opening of his hesped, he spoke about Rav Hudna and he said, some people say that Rav Hudna ran his yeshiva like a kingdom. They said that really wasn't accurate. It would be more correct to say that he ran his yeshiva like an empire. And he went on to describe the tremendous yira that existed in the Bachrut, in the yeshiva. That if you were sitting and learning and somebody came over to you and said, the Rosh Yeshiva wants to speak to you, you immediately did two things. You put on your hat and jacket, and you started to shake. That was the relationship that they had to Rav Hudna. And when I heard this, I thought this was very strange. Because Rav Lichtenstein always spoke with such tremendous respect for Rav Hudna. And yet he was a very different kind of Rosh Yeshiva. We didn't run, obviously, to put on our hats and jackets if you called to speak to us. And we didn't tremble. We didn't have fear. But we had tremendous awe. Because you saw Rav Lichtenstein day in and day out. And you just were mesmerized by how he behaved, by his personality. Rav Soloveitchik always would sign his name, Yosef Dov Ben Hagon HaChosid Rav Moshe Zatzal. He always referred to Rav Meisha Soloveitchik, his father, as a Gon and a Chosid. And I think that same two qualities can be applied to Rav Lichtenstein. He was a Gaon and he was a Chassid. In terms of his Torah knowledge, anybody who ever spoke to him in learning just would be blown away. We always felt it's like a computer. Whatever sugya you were involved in, it didn't matter where it was in Shas. It's like you pressed the button and and immediately he would talk as if he was in the middle of learning that sugya. As if he saw everything just 5 minutes ago. But there were many other areas of his personality that used to blow us away. Rav Lichtenstein's father, Dr. Yechiel Lichtenstein Zatzal, later on in life was blind. He was also hard of hearing. And occasionally, Dr. Lichtenstein would come to the yeshiva. And he'd be there for Shabbos. Sometimes I think even for Yom Noron. And he would stand next to Rav Lichtenstein to daven. But especially if it was on Yom Noron, when the davening was unfamiliar. Rav Lichtenstein used to daven with his father. Dr. Lichtenstein was not a man of tall stature. He was quite short. Rav Lichtenstein was, relatively speaking, quite tall. And throughout Shemona Esrei, Rav Lichtenstein would stand next to his father, bent over, and recite davening, mila b'mila, word by word, so his father could be able to daven. I don't remember, maybe he did, I don't remember him ever giving a shiur on Kibbutz Avaim. But it wasn't necessary. You just would see him. and his own davening. Especially Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. No matter how long of a davening you had, his was longer. No matter how intense you thought your davening was, just watching him, even from behind, and you can see how intense it was. And his dveikus b'Hashem, Tzoy Yom Kippur, the end of Yom Kippur, it's such intense davening by Ne'ilah. And then they would blow shofar, the end of Ne'ilah, and all of a sudden Rav Lichtenstein would jump up. He was a different person. He would start leading, together with Rav Amital Zatzal, the whole yeshiva, and singing, Min HaMeitzar Karasika Anani Vamerchavka. Called out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's answered. And that his slavos was so evident on his face that for almost for the entire davening had been covered with a talus, and now we could all see. And his anivus, his modesty. He never acted like a big Rosh Yeshiva. But we just were amazed. Every little thing that he did. To you it may sound like a small thing, but I still remember I was there. It must have been Shana Aleph. And some guy's walking in the dining room. And he's carrying, I don't know, it must have been a tray or something, and he dropped a spoon on the floor. And Rav Lichtenstein is walking by, and just like, of course, he picked up the spoon and walked after the guy to hand it to him. But it was nothing. I would have mentioned something for me to have looked at you like you're crazy, but like, of course. Somebody drops something, you pick them, bend down and pick it up. Gemara in Brachos, in the ninth parak, has a whole sugi about dreams. And it says, Ein marim duluim ela liyirei shamayim. Only Yirei Shemayim dream about pumpkins. Pumpkins? Says Rav Nissim Gold, what do pumpkins have to do with Yirei Shemayim? Tell you what pumpkins have to do with Yirei Shemayim. A pumpkin is one of the biggest vegetables in the that exist. It can grow to be huge. But there's something amazing about the pumpkin. The bigger that it is, the bigger that it grows, the closer it is to the ground. Says Rav Nissim Gaon, Kol shemosif lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu gdola v'kavod u'nesiat chein, mosif en anova u'nemichos. The more that HaKadosh Baruch Hu grants somebody a yorei shamayim, godless and kavod, they just respond with greater and greater anivos. They just lower themselves even more. I'm sure Rav Lichtenstein was worthy to dream about pumpkins. Where it tells us, Tamidei Chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam. Sometimes the cynics say, the Gemara must have been joking when it said that. But if you ever saw Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Amital together in the yeshiva, I think I once heard this from Rabbi Lam, Sheyichim. He says, there you saw Kiyam, Tamidei Chachamim Marvim Shalom Ba'olam. That doesn't mean that they didn't disagree. I don't think I was in yeshiva that year. One year on Yom Kippur, there was a disagreement between the two of them. There was a rotation that used to take place every year. One year of Amital used to get Mafti Yonah, and one year of Lichtenstein. Next year of Lichtenstein used to get. So they went over to Rav Amital to give him Mafti Yonah, and he said, no, he had it last year, they should give it to Rav Lichtenstein. They went to Rav Lichtenstein, and he said, no, Rav Amital's mistaken, he had it last year, they should give it to Rav Amital. They went back to Rav Amital, and they went back to Rav Lichtenstein, and each one was disagreeing. The other one should be the one who's getting maftiyum. That's the kind of disagreements that they had. Eventually, Rav Amital resolved it. He said he'll get the aliyah, and Rav Lichtenstein will read the haftarah. And Rav Lichtenstein was also, in many ways, a mora derech. He was somebody who led the way. Not because he put himself in front, but because everybody turned to him for advice and for guidance. He was never somebody who did or thought whatever he did or think just because that's what you're supposed to do. What he did, what he thought, is what he really thought about a great deal and felt was the right thing to do. When he decided to come on Aliyah, I think in 1970, it was not at all a simple matter. Not only because it wasn't so simple to come on Aliyah in 1970, but because Rav Soloveitchik was very upset about the decision. And he didn't want him to leave. His daughter, his son-in-law, his Talmud Muvak, should give up his future at Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan to go to some little yeshiva that almost nobody ever heard of in the middle of nowhere. He was very angry. Rav Lichtenstein thought about it, discussed it with his other rebbeim. He felt that that's the right thing to do, so he did it. And he once told us that when he was living in America, they thought he was the biggest, people accused him of being the biggest Tzioni. Came to Eretz Yisrael, and here they accused him of not being Tzioni enough. But as the Torah tells us, Vayas Kein Aaron in Parshas Baloscha, says Rashi, Melamed Shaloshina. He didn't change. Meaning if he felt that something was right, then that's what he did. And that's how he acted. So they thought about him this way in Chutz Laretz and that way in Eretz Yisrael. But if he felt that that was the right derech, then that's what he did. He came to Yeshivat HaRetzion, I think in the third year of the yeshiva. It was a little yeshivale. It started off in Kfar Etzion. I don't know if it had moved to Alon Shvut by the time he came. But it was hardly on the map. And over the next well over four decades, he, together with Rav Amital, turned it into a tremendous citadel of Torah. He taught a full generation of Talmidim, the full second generation of Talmidim. Many of the guys in yeshiva, in the last number of years, children, Talmidim had been in yeshiva in the for earlier years. One of the great Rashi Yeshiva in YU, David Lifshitz Zatzal, contemporary of the Rav, wasn't there when this happened, but they told me about it. He was visiting Eretz Yisrael, and he came in to Rav Lichtenstein, was giving shiur, and he went over to Rav Lichtenstein, and he kissed him on the forehead. His Rebbeim loved him. And his Talmidim loved him. Rav Lichtenstein, I think more than anything else, Rav Lichtenstein loved HaKadosh Baruch Hu. B'chol levavo, b'chol nafsho, b'chol ma'odo.